Welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. Back in 2011 or so, a group of friends started Good George Brewing because they wanted to make beer that was truly world-class and set about opening a brew pub in Hamilton, New Zealand. The only problem was none of them knew how to brew. Luckily for them, one of their customers was a bloke called Brian Hamilton, and he was an international beer judge. He asked if he could brew for them, and as they say, the rest is history. But instead of finishing the episode right there, I thought it'd be a little bit more interesting to invite Brian on for a chat. So from all the way across the ditch, welcome to the Beer Healer Interviews, Brian Hamilton.
Brian Watson, actually.
Oh, shit, is it? Fuck. I'll re-record that later. What a good Hamilton.
And also, like, it was the three of us that started the business.
Oh, there was three of you.
So it was actually, it was my idea. It was, you know, so I started and approached these guys to say, hey, how about we do a brew together? And they went, great, love to.
Well, how about I don't worry about re-recording all that stuff and we just go with this. It's sure. Live. It's live, baby. Brian. Yeah. Not Brian Hamilton. Yeah. You're from Hamilton.
From Hamilton, yeah.
Jesus, I got that completely wrong. Anyway, that's how it goes sometimes. I told you before that I'm not a journalist and I just run with my own research, so I need to fire myself from my research department. So,
right. Okay, yeah.
Well, thanks for joining me. I'm glad to have you on here because I know there's a lot to talk about today, but do you want to go back to the start when you and the other two founders had that discussion with what the hell are you going to do?
Oh, look, you know, I'd been living in Australia for a number of years and came back to New Zealand, back to Hamilton, which is where I'm from, my family's from, and my wife's family from there, and was still travelling over to I was running the Mildura Brewery, actually. So I was commuting between Hamilton and Mildura, which is not really sustainable. So
that's a fair commute.
Yeah, I thought, you know, in Hamilton in those days, it still is actually a bit of a beer desert. So it's, you know, it's a city of 200,000 people, and you know, there was no brewery and to speak of. So I approached a couple of guys that I had a few beers with, and over the course of the next couple of years, we hatched a plan to start a brewing company in Hamilton.
Hamilton,
yeah,
and how did the church come into it? You found an old church that was abandoned. Was it? What sort of condition was it in?
Well, the actual story was I was just minding my business one day. I got a call from Jason, my business partner, and we'd been talking for a couple of years. And it was the point, I guess, of action. He rings me and says, "Hey, listen, I've found a site, and it's in an old church." I was like, "Hallelujah!" And he goes, "But it's in Frankton, which is quite an industrial area, very close to the city, but it was kind of, you know, a pretty rough area going back in the day." And so we went and had a look at it, and it was totally derelict. There was holes in the floor. There was a homeless woman living in the car out the back. 1,200 square meters, totally overgrown. And I said, "Man, are you serious?" He goes, "Yeah, look. These guys have been in bars and restaurants their whole lives. So, you know, right. Jason's owned his first restaurant at 19. And so, you know, 20 years later, he's, you know, still been in bars and restaurants. So I had to kind of trust him to go, yeah, cool, this is the right spot." And so we were close to the city, we're close to the rugby ground. We are on the same street as the cricket ground, which we have a lot of internationals here in Hamilton. So yeah, it seemed like a good site, but it seemed also like a lot of work to get it up to scratch.
And look, as I sort of said in my terrible opener, none of you guys except for you probably knew anything about brewing. And that came about from your experience as a beer judge. How many years did you do that for?
Oh, mate, look, I've been brewing my whole career. So I pretty much, geez, what is it now, 2020? I started brewing at DB Heineken in 1990 as a trainee brewer.
Jesus, you old bastard.
I know, I am an old bastard and have been around the tracks. I'm still young.
Yeah.
I was only 10 at the time. And so, look, I've been brewing my whole career. So I've been brewing both here in New Zealand and the UK and Ireland and as a brewing consultant, and I've set up a number of breweries all over the world, really. And so, you know, coming back to New Zealand was, you know, it was an opportunity to bring my family home. But I've been judging Australian awards, beer awards consecutively every year since I think about 2003.
Okay. Four.
So, yep, and New Zealand Beer Awards since 1998, World Beer Cup since 2008. So, yeah, so like, you know, the judging follows, I guess, from hand in hand with being a brewer, you know,
yeah.
Certainly for, you know, I'm involved in the selection process of the judges in New Zealand as one of the committee. You know, we look for brewers, people that live and breathe beer every day.
Yeah,
they really understand what it takes to make good beer.
I'll give you a chance to name drop some of your peers in the judging group. Who have you hung out with over the years?
Just the usual suspects: Quentin Harris and Brad Rogers and Owen Johnson and, you know, Jane nice. Lewis and, you know, like generally, you know, Dave Benighton. Just good people. We actually
good people.
We yeah. travel together. You know, Carl Vester from here in New Zealand. One of, you know, technically a big competitor of mine. But man, we've travelled prior to the World Beer Cup through Tennessee, and we've been through New York together. And, you know, Warren Pawsey from Little Creatures as well.
Yeah, kind
of, we all nice. Get, you know, Richard Watkins from Bent Spoke. You know, they
what about Chuck Hahn?
Oh, yeah, no, Chuck.
can you do a – everybody that knows Chuck can do a Chuck Hahn impression. Have you got one for
no,
me?
No, I haven't. No.
Oh, what?
No, I haven't got a Chuck Hahn impression. I wouldn't even – oh, I mean, in deference to the great man, I wouldn't even try, you know.
I
love Chuck.
He's a great man, yeah.
Bloody great man, yeah.
He was one of the guys that when I was at Lion that introduced me to craft beer, and everybody at Lion could do an impression of him with his window panes of ruby mahogany or, you know, that sort of stuff. So it's fair, you know what I mean? It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
so.
I've done Chuck a few times as well, even in I think World Beer Cup a few years ago, and yeah, he was quite funny. Oh, like he's a very funny man too.
Yes, and hilarious.
Hilarious sense of humor. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's great.
Yeah.
All right, so you came back home effectively and thought you might set up this place called Good George. What was your vision, apart from trying to turn a derelict old church into a brew pub of some description, what was your vision for Good George?
Oh, it's a really good question. We had no vision. So I know it's hard to believe now, but we were really just kind of – it was a process of moving home and getting back into New Zealand. I was still consulting and traveling all over the world and setting up breweries and working with DME, setting up breweries, you know, in lots of different countries. And we had no plan. The plan was to set up a brew pub in Frankton, in Hamilton, which is an industrial area. We weren't going to open on the weekends. We thought, who's going to come to an industrial area in the weekends? We'll open, you know, Monday to Friday and maybe have a happy hour, half hour on a Thursday night. That was kind of the limit of it. We thought, okay, 18 kegs a week was our break even. Great, let's make sure we can sell 18 kegs a week. So that was the plan. You know, my business partners are you know, very good hospo guys. You know, within the good George group, now there's 12 bars and restaurants. Some of them are owned by us and the brewery. Some of them are owned by just my business partners, and some of them are owned by other people. So they've got really good in-depth experience. So they kind of ran the pub and I ran the brewery. It's pretty much easy. And even now our roles are very defined, as one of us looks after brewing, of course, one of us looks after sales, one of us looks after marketing. So it's quite unique, really well-blended skill set.
So what was the first beer that you brewed to fill those 18 kegs?
Right, it was a pale ale.
Yeah.
It was a pale ale. Look, I've spent most of my life as a lager brewer, so I just wanted to do ales. I wanted to do ales. And so we did a 20 BU or 20, 25 BU Galaxy and Amarillo Bomb. We called it a sparkling pale ale just to make to differentiate it. And then we had a white ale and an IPA and an amber. So, you know, we're in you know, big time Lion Waikato country here. So we needed to have a product which was similar to Waikato, but not being Waikato. But also there was lower in alcohol. We're kind of inspired by Emerson's Bookbinder. You know,
beautiful.
Well, let's have a beer that you can have a pint. And, you know, assuming that you're not, you know, 4 foot nothing and 25 kilos, you can drive home, you know.
Yes.
So I wanted to drive home. That was the plan. So those are kind of our initial offering. And then we always thought the pale ale would be our big seller. It was for the first year or so. And now our IPA has just become a juggernaut, really.
IPA in New Zealand is just Everybody loves it, don't they?
Yeah, it's look around the world. You know, you do put IPA or something. You know, and now it's put a hazy IPA. Jeez, it sells even faster. Yeah. You know, so we had one employee who was Kelly Ryan, who was our original brewer, and because I was still traveling and consulting around the world, and so Kelly was the run brewer, and we had a few people in the bar, but yeah, so that then I think our target was 50,000 litres in the first year, so 1,000 litres a week was our target, you know, which is 20 kegs, and yeah. We did more than that, a lot more than that.
Nice. It sounds like a really good start to what has eventually become a pretty big business, as you sort of alluded to there earlier. We'll get into that shortly. Just back on you for the moment. So you said you're a lager brewer. What sort of beers do you like to brew now? What are your favourite beers? Is it all about the IPA for you these days? Or
it really does vary. And, now I sound like a depending on my mood, as they would say in Dublin. You know, I will drink anything, really. You know, I love beer. I love all types of beer. What I don't abide is bad beer. I love good beer. So whether it's a Belgian sour or it's a double IPA, I'll drink it and enjoy it as long as it's good and fresh and balanced.
I like to hear you say balanced.
Yeah.
Because sometimes beers these days just get a little bit too over the top with whether it be terms of bitterness or whatever. But yeah. I love a good balanced beer that you can have a couple of.
Yeah. A lot of people forget about malt, eh? And David Cryer.
Yeah. Right. So you're saying before that you worked as a brewery consultant. What did that sort of involve for you?
Oh, look, because I've been brewing for a long time, it was a relatively easy, people would just come to me and say, hey, listen, I need a bit of help setting up my brewery, or I need help with some of my beers that are, I'm not really that happy with. So I'd pretty much, that's how it started, was really going into helping them. I got the opportunity, just bumped into some guys at the Australian Beer Festival, the Australian Hotel. How they have that long weekend in September.
Yeah.
September, October in Sydney there. And they said, hey, listen, we're sitting on a brew in Fiji. We need your help. I was like, okay, great. So I caught up with them and they said, right, when can you fly to Fiji? I said, Fiji, anytime you like.
Tomorrow.
And so that's how it really started. That was the Vonu Brewery.
Is that part of Vonu? Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. So what they bought us, some equipment was on the water, so I basically set that up, put a brew in there, Dave Bruff in there, and then when Dave left, I just continued to run it, got local staff and trained them, and was up there every week, and then every second week, and then every fourth week, and then every sixth week, and then every couple of months would go there.
I've got to tell you that on a few trips to Fiji, I've consumed my fair share of Vonu because it was so much better than any of the other land.
We had to resort to drinking gin while we were setting it up because some of it was pretty bad. And, of course, they don't know how to look after their lines. So we had lots of challenges of infected lines. The glass washers weren't used as glass washers. They were used to store vegetables. So they weren't even cleaning their glasses properly. Like I had to resort to, and dare I say, I had to resort to adding PGA, which is a head stabilizing compound, because the head on the beer wouldn't stay because the glasses were so dirty.
Oh, yuck. Yeah. I remember that was the first time I went over the trip with my wife and the kids. That was the first time I bought beer back into Australia, when I bought back a carton of Vonu in the bottom of my suitcase, because at that stage it hadn't come to Australia, and that was probably 2008, maybe, I think, somewhere around there. So
yeah, so that was a really good story, actually, that business. You know, owned by the Ulrich brothers, so I was just the guy that set it up for them and ran the brewery for them. But they sold it to Cope, I think, within 4 years, and did pretty well out of it. So it was a really real success story for them.
It was quite unique for its time, really, that beer, wasn't it?
Oh, back in the day, there was nothing else. We were excise license number 8 in Fiji. We had to have a customs officer in the brewery. He had to have an air-conditioned little shed, and the brewery had to be shut by 5 o'clock. So it was perfect for me because I just typically, when you're in a brewery, you just work as long as you have to work. But if you have to shut by 5, you make it happen. So by 5, the brewery was shut every day. So it's perfect for me because I'm by the pool having a beer by 5:30. It's brilliant.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, so it was and everyone had to, they only had Fiji breweries, the local Paradise Beverages now, to be able to, you had to go to the brewery to pick it up. If you were you had an off license, they didn't deliver. You had to go to a brewery. So it was quite a bit of a game changer for Fiji that actually we would deliver. And they're like, okay. So all the resorts and everything they could, you know, have just in the van would deliver beer to them. So it was quite different from the way it had always been.
Still remember those Vonu beer towers on Denaroo Island.
Oh, yeah. Cardo's. Down to Cardo's there. Yeah.
Great stuff. Got a question for you. Do you like the show? And do you want to help support the industry that we all love by spreading the craft beer gospel far and wide? Well, there is one thing you can do, and it doesn't involve putting your hand in your pocket and pulling out your credit card. Nope, just click the Apple Podcast link in the show notes and leave a review and a rating. The Apple Podcast gods do the rest, and you will feel all warm and fuzzy for doing your bit for craft beer. That's all. Back to the interview.
And brewing and brewing consulting has led you to Tasmania too. I found out when we sort of were chatting offline earlier.
Yeah, look, I had the great pleasure of working with Cornell at Shambles Brewery, and then the guys at the Hobart
Scott
Brewing
and Jimmy.
So, So really, so I spent a good couple of weeks there in hop season, and of course I know Owen Johnson pretty well from HPA. So we had a few beers there and really enjoyed it.
Nice. Well, look, we better bring it back to Good George because that's what we're here to talk about today. Yeah. But as I told you before, we sometimes go off on tangents and I love to explore the backstories and stuff. But when I was doing my research around Good George, one of the things that really intrigued me was your packaged formats. You're in cans like most breweries these days, but it was the 940ml squeals that I was really interested in because, you know, many breweries do them as a takeaway from the brewery or similar size to that, but I can't say I've seen them widely for sale in Australia, but you have them over there in the supermarkets, don't you? Why that format?
Well, look, there's a story to it. So, okay. There's a few stories, not necessarily a story of success, but, you know, the great thing about the, well, it is now as it's turned out, but it was kind of thrust upon us and would force us to be able to do stuff because it started when I think I was installing maybe the Newstead Brewery the Newstead Brewery in Brisbane there, and I think we'd gone to what's the brewery around the corner from the original Newstead? Is it Green Beacon?
Maybe. Green Beacon's close, yeah. I think. Yeah.
And then I'd picked up one of those, the Boston Squealer, and I thought, man, this is really cool. I've never seen one before. So I took a photo of it, texted it to my business partner, Jason. He goes, man, love it. Let's do it. So we went to the guys in Lawrence, Kansas, and said, listen, we want a few squealers. So that was – we hadn't packaged anything at that stage. We still have our original little 12-hectolitre brewery, which we've upgraded the kettle now. We're – high gravity, well, not high gravity, but we are punching out 20 hectolitres out of this little brewery. And it was the first time we'd actually packaged. So it was all going pretty well. We had a little HDP bottle filler, which would fill two bottles every, I don't know, 5 minutes. It took forever.
Shit.
slow. And then we started to get it out into supermarkets and we started to get out into places. And then a couple of things happened. First of all, we got a call from our sales manager, and he goes, hey, guys, and we'd had them all marked as 1 litre because, like, they're a 1 litre bottle. And he says, hey, guys, are you sure that these are 1 litre bottles? And we're like, pretty sure. And he says, well, I was standing in the brewery with a measuring cylinder, and I'm telling you, they're only 945 mils. Oh, shit. He said, coincidentally, that's 32 fluid ounces, and they're coming from the USA. It's like, that's right. So I thought, oh, no, what do we do? So we rang Weights and Measures, and they said, you've done what? So he said, oh, listen, you know, look, we thought they were 1 litres. We've laid them on as 1 litres, but they're actually 946. And they said, you know what? Because you rang us and let us know, you're good. All you need to do, so we're not going to recall anything, but you just carry on, but make sure that, you know, you change the on any new stuff. So, they, you know, we have, you know, at any one time had 200,000 bottles on the water. So we were like, okay, so we had a little good army of people and cross out the little 946 with a black ink and put on a little, sorry, cross out the 1 litre and put on a 946 mil sticker about 2 millimetre high. So we relabeled all the bottles, and then that summer, something else happens, that it was a pretty particularly hot summer in February, and any time it got above 30 degrees, we'd get random reports of bottles exploding.
Oh, shit.
Honestly exploding.
Oh, and, no.
You know, and including an off-license, he said, oh, look, one of my customers has just walked past a bottle on a shelf, and it just spontaneously exploded sitting on the shelf. We're like, oh, what? And that, of course, yeah, we've had a few panics in our life. Not panics is not the right word, challenges. And where that was one of the crisis points of like, shit, what do we do? What do we do? I rang up the guys in Lawrence, Kansas, and they said, I said, what's this bottle used for? They said, beer. I said, so what's a pressure tester for? Well, it's not. I said, well, how do you justify sending out the beer if it's not pressure tested? I'll keep the beer cold.
Oh, no.
So I was like, oh, what do we do now? So we were really forced to move fast, and we thought, oh, look, time has come. The format was proving quite popular because it was something different and unique, and it was a very shareable size, and it wasn't just a cool bottle. So they're all screen printed. So we very fast rang up OI and got ourselves our own, well, I wouldn't say very fast, over the course of 6 months, got our own squealer, which was pressure tested to 6 bar. So
nice.
we had to get our own mold, but we were forced to do it by a pretty crap supplier out of the US. And then we thought, shit, we've broken the back of the 946. Let's just keep it 946.
Yeah.
Because there's always a story.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. And so how many beers do you put into these squealers these days? Most of them are?
Yeah. So we maybe 2 years ago launched cans. So but still most of it is in there. So I think probably 35 different, I don't know how many, probably 25 different products go into a squealer.
Yep.
So whether it's an IPA, an APA, and of course we do a lot of cider as well.
Yes. Yeah. Do you ever have any issues in terms of the number of standard drinks in a 946 if you had like a high ABV IPA or something like that in there?
No. We just released a white IPA at 7.2%. No issue.
So how many standard drinks is in a 946 with that? Right.
Oh, a lot.
Carry the one. Five or six. I don't know.
I have to find one. I go throw one out of my fridge, but I drank most of them.
I don't know, because I get the feeling that maybe in Australia there might have been stuff in the past where there's been a high ABV beer in a larger format bottle, and you know there might have caused issues with
Generally we don't go above 6.2 because the excise, you know, similar to Australia, just kills you. So the challenge has been to create really full, flavourful beers around that 5.8 to 6.4 range, I think we've done pretty well over the years at the both Australia and New Zealand awards. So I think we're and obviously the volumes are growing, so we're on the right track. We think
you've had a pretty good run with the awards over the years, haven't you?
Yeah, look, it doesn't happen by chance either, eh? We've worked really hard at particularly our IPA. So you know, over the first few years, it always got bronzes, and then we thought, okay, silvers. And I come back from a judge and go, man, and I review all the beers and go, okay, right, we can make this one better. And then we got the IP up to silvers and silver and silver, and then we cracked gold, and it's got gold every year since. So it's been nice. Really, both in Australia and New Zealand. So, you know, and then even this year, you know, our APA, which we've been working on as well, got gold at the New World Beer Insider Awards. So, yeah, pretty happy. Yeah, with that. It's always a challenge, though, just to try and get the beer. We pride ourselves on consistency. So one of our real mottos is we'll never give you a shit beer. So if it, you know.
Is that something you share with the public? That's your motto?
Yep.
Is it? That's great.
Yep. Because, you know, we pride ourselves on producing good beer, and we want our customers to have the confidence that they can buy our beer, and it's not going to be shit.
I love that. I work for a company, and one of our values is get shit done. I love it.
Yeah. So, and like, there's some shit beer out there that should never even gone out the door. Now, there's a difference between, you know, some of them is oxidized, but some of it was, you know, not great in the first place. Don't get me wrong. There's lots of other stuff out there.
Yeah. I want to take you back to 2018 just quickly, where I heard you sent some kegs to a festival in New York. Was that the first time that you sent Good George beer into the USA?
First time we sent it anywhere.
Anywhere. Anywhere. Oh, right, okay, anywhere.
Yeah, we're fortunate that we've got some people that work with us, are very smart. So, you know, one of the guys said to us, look, don't export until you've fulfilled every single opportunity to supply beer to your local market, to your wider market, and to New Zealand. Everything else to do with export is just ego wank. Right,
like, yeah, it's okay. Pretty good advice. Yeah,
you know, he said otherwise because it's your ego. Oh, I've got beer over here, over here, over here. We all know beer doesn't travel.
You know? Yep.
And then why would you buy beer from somewhere else when you've got pretty damn good beer locally? So we, how the New York thing worked was, you know, I know Jerry Mitchell quite well from the days when I actually, you know, worked with him to set up his 50 hectare brewery, and we kind of, I think, have a similar view on business and enjoy life. And so he was allowed to invite. So they had a big ABI conference over there, and he was allowed to invite one partner from Australia. Australasia invited us, and then Pirate Life invited Scotty from Bolter. So four of us kind of went over there, and yeah, we had a pretty good time.
Nice.
And yeah, we sent some beer over, and we had a kiwi fruit sour, which I think was the biggest seller in the show. So
no, I was going to ask you what you sent over. Yeah,
a kiwi fruit sour. So yeah, no point taking an IPA. It's like taking a
no. Exactly. I was going to say that. Yeah. Because take over something unique.
Yeah. So we had a kiwi fruit sour that we'd launched the previous year at Beerbana, and it just gone nuts. So we sent it over there, and people were just. I think, you know, people know what a kiwi fruit is, surprisingly, in New York, which was amazing.
That's good because they don't know a lot about Australia, that's for sure, experiences.
Yeah, it was a great time. We managed to see some sites and have some see some venues and look at some breweries and visit, you know, breweries like Other Half and Boston. Brookton Brewery, and you know those guys are really, really good in showing us around as well.
How good is the Brooklyn Brewery? I loved my tour of that. It was so great.
Yeah. Oh, look, it was. We had a great time, and it was good to, you know. Eric showed us around, one of the owners, just to hear some of the war stories that he's battling, because they're at a different stage of their evolution, and that they're big now, so they're fighting to retain relevance.
Yes,
so
yeah.
It was really interesting.
I think one of my favourite things about visiting the Brooklyn Brewery was actually getting there, you know, jumping on the subway, walking through the streets, seeing that cool sort of surrounds of this, you know, of the brewery, and I loved it.
In there too, don't they?
Oh, bloody earth they do. Yeah. And such a great little brewery tour. You just tried some of these great old beers. They were pulling out bottles of this and that sort of thing. It was just a magnificent time. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Really, a really great brewery tour experience. In one of the best, I think. So
yeah. We loved it.
Have you got a favorite American brewery?
Yeah, without sounding like a dick, it would be Russian River. We were lucky enough before we judged, I think 2014 World Beer Cup in Denver or 2012 in Denver. You know, me and Brendan Barris from Feral and Warren Pawsey from Little Creatures and Carl from Tuatara, Lockie from Grainfed went and visited Vinny, and very fortunate enough to go there for the 10-year anniversary and go through the brewery with him.
Oh, cool.
In the morning, first thing he did was hand us a 10-year-old bottle of 100% Brett beer for just walking around the brewery, and then chuck some Pliny in your hand. When that was done, you walk around just necking from the bottle of, you know, a bottle of Pliny. I'm like, oh my God. And then we got invited into the celebration that night for their anniversary. And we just, yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, nice.
It was kind of legendary, and the beers were outstanding. Really good.
I had Pliny. Fresh Pliny for the first time. It was a week old Pliny when I was in Boston last time. Someone had brought it back across the country with them for some reason. I was in a bar watching a game of American football with a mate of mine, and a couple of beer lovers sitting next to us had these Russian River beers and shared them with us. It was wow. God, yeah, it was great. It was awesome. Craft beer makes the world go round, in my opinion. so good.
Yeah.
Hey, so when you were there in 2018, did you brew with anybody, or was it just really just the business trip?
No, it was there was an amazing lecture, day of lectures on the Friday, with like there was 70 brewers from around the world, And there was some wicked topics that we were talking about. It was all very relevant, and even things like the rise of the lower alcohol beer, and lots of different topics. So it was amazing, and we were busy doing stuff, visiting breweries and everything. No, I didn't have time to do a brew over there.
Did you set up any plans for collaborations?
Oh, look, we've always got plans. We actually had some collaborations. Mallow Brewing Company, we were going to do a collaboration in this month, but clearly it hasn't happened. So we haven't done many collaborations because, we've really focused on what we're doing here in Hamilton. And as we, as we continue to grow, we push the boundaries with capacity, unfortunately. So to do collaborations is kind of difficult because we're brewing 2 to 3 times a day, 5 days a week.
Okay. Yeah. That was just my chance to try and do a very clever segue to the collaboration you did with Newstead in 2017 for their Gabs beer. Yeah. I read the story of that just this week, and you might just want to retell it because that was an amazing little, the sense of timing and everything with that in terms of the hop harvest and stuff.
Oh, they drove all the way.
Yeah.
So they chucked in the van and they drove all the way up from Nelson, which, from Nelson to Hamilton is not a mean feat because we don't have big, long highways. It's like you're driving through the country
road.
We were waiting for them and waiting and waiting, and then they turned up probably 7 o'clock at night, maybe. And I had a couple of hop grower and another brewer were coming in, so we had a few beers with them. So by the time they turned up, it was like we only mashed in about 8 o'clock at night, and it was good fun. I've known Mark since we set up that brewery. Worked with him to set up that brewery, so it was great to be able to sit and have a beer and just chew the fat. Really,
it was nice. Good. Nice. Have you brewed with any other Aussie breweries in collaboration at all, or just those guys?
No, we haven't done any. Done any collaboration brews. We've talked about it, but that's as far as we've got.
Fair enough. There's plenty of time for that.
Oh, absolutely. So it's something we do want to do and will be doing in the future. So it's kind of identified now that more and more people are looking for new stuff. So to be able to work with. Be great to be able to do as soon as we can get again. Working with some of our mates in Australia to be able to do some beer together would be great.
Sounds like you're pretty well connected. So there's obviously opportunities out there,
mate. When you've been around as long as I have, you kind of know a few people.
Fair enough. As you said before, like there's a lot going on. There's not a lot of time to collaborate, but because these days, what you've got in terms of Good George is quite a sizable operation. Do you want to explain the very different parts to the business? Because I was trying to work it out on the website. There's a lot to it, a lot more than just the old church, isn't there?
Yeah, look, it's I guess at its core, it's a brewing business which has a hospitality business associated with it. So the brewery on site, still a 20-hectolitre brewery, but it's kind of working. I think we've done over 4,000 brews on it now, and it's probably about 35% cider. We make this, so we started off doing cider because we thought, well, how would a brewer go about making cider? So what we did is we actually added hops to our first ciders and called it was supposed to be called dry hop cider, but they cocked up the spelling, so it became a drop hop cider. So we thought, what's wrong with that on the labels? And the very first year we entered it, it won the best cider in New Zealand. We were like,
oh wow.
Oh my goodness, we're onto something here. We don't know what we're doing quite yet, but we'll figure it out. So turns out we actually got better and better at making cider. And I find winemakers make really good brewers because they understand, they understand pumps and fluid, and they've got generally a good palate. So I've had quite a few winemakers come in through the brewery, and we've trained them to be brewers. And they've helped us to continue to improve our cider. So the next one we had was one of our brewers just chucked in some Doris plums into a cider and called it Doris cider. So okay, great, Doris cider. We only had it on Thursdays because Thursdays was Doris day, and that product has just, it's the only product we've ever seen where people, if it's not on, will walk out and go somewhere else to find it.
It's still, seriously?
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Wow.
And that I think won the best flavored cider last year at the New Zealand Beer Awards. So the cider's going really well for us.
And not only that, you're doing gins and stuff now as well, aren't you?
Well, the gin was kind of a passion for us. You know, we wanted to do it. It's a relatively small still, 380 liters. But we wanted to do it, and we thought, right, let's do some gin. So we did some last year. Really, it was just we did enough for us. And then what really drove it, we started to do it on a – we opened up a new venue on North Wharf. So basically there's about 12 Good George venues, the brewery. Some of the venues, if you think about them, they're all – it's a separate business, but it's kind of related. So my business partners own some of the bars. We, the brewery, own some of them, and some of them are owned by other people. So it's quite a unique business. But what it means is there's a really good route to market for our on-premiseness. And we have that little brew pub. We started off with three tanks, three 25-hectare tanks. I think now we've got something like 18 to 20,
oh, shit.
50 and 100-hectare tanks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of grown. We've cut the garden bar back three times. So jeez. Put more tanks in, upgraded refrigeration, dug a tunnel underneath the road to be able to put we're putting in nitrogen generator, hot and cold liquor, CO2, big compressors, because the packaging is running two shifts a day, so we need to be able to get plenty of services to them. So it's become quite a challenging business to run, but good fun.
Yeah, nice. And so you've been going for around about 10 years, is that right?
8 years, yep.
8 years, is it? Yep. Wow.
About 9 years in September.
You've achieved a lot in that time. How have you seen the sort of the craft beer scene in and around you change over those 8 years, 8 or 9 years?
Oh, we kind of started almost the same time as Garage Project and Parrot Dog. So
okay, yep.
They're about 2011, 2012, same as us. And so, you know, if you go back to those days, look, it's changed for out of sight.
Absolutely. You know,
craft has become very well accepted. Back in those days, it's like, craft beer, you know, I don't drink that craft beer shit, you know. So it's changed. There's lots and lots of breweries have come in, there's lots of talk about craft. Beervana has driven a lot of exposure to new and different styles, because Beervana now is more.
I want to come one day.
Yeah, it's like all the new stuff. So you don't turn up to Beervana with your IPA. You turn up with whatever you've done, especially for Beervana, because people just go nuts over whether it's a, you know, marshmallow and pecan pie butternut stout, or it's you know what I mean. So it's got to be new and unique for Beervana, and that's driven a lot of people's interest, I think, in craft beer. And there's been other festivals, and you know that it's just evolving really. And at the core of it is some pretty good people making pretty bloody good beer, actually.
What's the camaraderie like between breweries, or is it very competitive?
No, it's great. It's good.
Is it?
Yeah,
I love to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. Look, you know, when we judge the New Zealand Beer Awards, one of the key criteria from the judging committee is they've got to be good bastard. You know, they've got to be there, and you know, it's all very well to be excellent at judging beer and have a really good palate and understand what it takes, but you've got to be able to do what we'd say play nice. You've got to be part of a team, have that team ethic. So, you know, there's lots of really good people. So it's great. It's great when we catch up. You know, you can pretty much call people and say, hey, look, I'm having a problem here. Can you help? And most people will go, yeah, no worries. What do you need?
Yeah. Who is your favourite New Zealand brewery outside of your own?
Favourite New Zealand brewery. Jeez. Oh, look, I love what Soren does at Number 8 Wyatt.
He does
some great stuff. You know, you can't go past Supercharger. because that's just a fantastic beer, consistently good too, which is really good. It's one of the ones you can rely on. Emerson's also do great beer again, which you can rely on. I was flying back, and some guys sitting next to, I happened to wear a Good George t-shirt. The guy next to me was a fan, and he was a really big flyer. He went to the waitress and said, "Oh, look, have you got any craft beer? Oh, I'll go get some from business class," and walk back, Orange Ruffy, which is a hazy pale ale, and we had that on in New Zealand. So it was really, really good. So they make some good beer too. So it's about that consistency. That's what I really look. I look for a beer that I know is going to be good. I don't want to pay my money and then go, okay, stuff as well up in Auckland. And of course, I can go on, but Joe at Liberty, Knife Party, some of his beers are outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that beer. It's great. Something about Air New Zealand, that's where I started my craft beer brewing journey, because I'd been watching the guys from BrewDog and their TV show, and I'd finished all the series on that, and I'd been watching them doing their home brewing and all that sort of thing, and that's where I designed my first three-vessel kit to make out of some old stuff at home. Air New Zealand, got to love them.
Right. Okay.
Not a sponsor of the show, though. So, as I said, 10 years nearly 10 years since I've been going. I'm just wondering, on behalf of the many listeners that, they dream of opening brew pubs, bars and brews, what has been the absolute best decision you ever made in the last decade in terms of your brewery?
You know what? My business partners.
Oh, relationships make the world go around, don't they?
Yep. You know what? The three of us went out for a beer last night. We've actually been in the business now for 10 years together. We went out for a beer last night just to talk about business, and we don't always sit there and talk about business, but what it is that they are very good at what they do, but they're also very good at working together as a team. So it's made all the difference. We would not be where we are now without the three of us. That's the big difference. It's very similar probably to Brad, Brad and Jamie and those guys at Stone and Wood. They have a very good dynamic. Ross looks after sales, and they know exactly what they're doing. Very similar to us.
It's what's that old thing that you're greater than the sum of the individual parts, the team or whatever.
Totally. And so I might come up with an idea, by the time it gets back around to me after the other two, it's totally different from what it was, but it's better.
It's awesome that you can still go out and enjoy beers together, because sometimes the rigor of business life and the stresses and all that sort of stuff, especially in recent times, that can get in the way and can actually ruin friendships. So it's nice to hear that you're still going.
I've subscribed to the Dave Benighton theory, and Dave and I are having a beer, and I said to him, what's the secret? Because at that stage he'd been in maybe 14 years in Mountain Goat. Something like that. And I said, what's the secret, mate? There's been two of you in the business, and what's the secret to maintaining that relationship? He goes, letting things slide. That's a really good idea, because tomorrow's another day. You just let things slide. You don't need to be overly defensive about stuff. You just let it slide.
Yeah, that's good advice, I reckon. Yeah. Pick your battles.
Exactly.
You're not going to win them all. That's good. And so moving forward, have you got any big plans to celebrate the 10th anniversary when that actually does arrive next year?
Hey, shit, mate. As of bloody 8 weeks ago, we were just not even planning to be in business still. So, it was
Don't you dare say the C word. We've avoided it this whole interview, and I don't want you to say it.
Look, no, for us it was a revelation because it meant that we were forced to focus on our business and the key elements which made it successful versus the ones that were draining us. So we made some really key strategic decisions, and it's been excellent for us. So we're still not focused anything further than the end of June at this stage, but we're getting there. I know we've got a strategy. I think a strategy catch up in the next couple middle of June to talk about. Okay, right, guys. Now we got through that. We've learned a lot, and our business is much stronger because of what we went through in the last 2 months. Much stronger.
Yeah. And got to say, shout out to you guys, because you did produce some sanitizer for the country too, which was nice to see.
You would not believe the amount of people that told me I couldn't do it or shouldn't do it. It was unbelievable, because we thought, the government departments that came out of the woodwork and said, no, you can't do that. We're like, Sorry. And we pretty much, I mean, it was a typical Kiwi reaction to something. It was a response to a need, because it was from a meeting on the Monday morning before we were shut down to say, oh, we'll just put some hand sanitizer out to keep our staff safe. And, you know, someone said, well, we don't have any, we can't get it. We thought, shit, we've got all the elements of it there. So, you know, overnight we kind of read a brewery in Scotland or a distillery in Scotland and used the World Health Organization formula. Turns out we had everything on site, got some glycerol. That was Monday. We had it bottled, made, and out the door by Thursday.
Oh, nice!
And it all, you know, all of those bottles went to the armed forces, the prison service, the hospitals, and just generally people who are immune compromised and had a need. So it was really, really about the community and the support. So I think we did 12,000 bottles in all, and we've given most of it away. Even though schools are coming back, we're still giving away. Still giving it away to schools.
It's great to hear, mate. It's great to hear. Pubs are opening back up around the country here in Australia at the moment, and Aussies are dead set hanging out to be able to drink fresh tap beer. Yep. I'm assuming you're in a similar situation.
Oh, look, we're ahead. So our pubs have been open for a couple of weeks. Still limited to 100 people, but people are slow to come out. It's quite surprising. Okay. They're just a little bit gun shy. They're coming out slowly. So they will. It is getting better. We see it week on week. It's getting better and better. But a couple of the venues, you know, 100 people doesn't scratch the sides, and on some venues, particularly over there in Australia. But you know, we're seeing it's coming back. And what we're seeing is people are just changing the way they're doing things now. You know, you've got to be single waitress, single server, a bit more social distancing, all that kind of stuff. So people are coming back. They're a little bit gun shy at the moment, but still, you know, having great fresh beer. We actually bought it all back from all of our customers to make sure we had fresh beer.
Nice.
All the dark beer all came back, and I've got, I would say, 5,000 litres of beer there. We're turning into I'm going to bring up the C word now. We are going to do a COVID whiskey from it. Oh. Release it in a couple of years. So we're making whiskey from all that beer that's come back.
Yeah. Oh, that's a bloody clever idea. How good is that?
Yeah, well, excise department, this won't give us rebate on the excise.
Ah.
So we're going to pay excise tonight. So we thought, we'll pull that, we'll hold it, and we can't sell it, so we might as well turn it into whiskey. Then when we sell it in whiskey, then the excise will be paid.
That'll be a unique tasting liquid, I imagine.
You know what? By the time you've aged it, we've got a little 112 litres, so half barrel virgin French oak barrels that pick up vanilla and oak really, really fast. So, and then we've got bourbon barrels, which have had imperial stout in. So we're aging them. So by the time they get through that process, surprisingly mellow and smooth. We've got beer that we did, you know, we only started this maybe a year ago in terms of making whiskey, which clearly we can't release it. We haven't released it yet, but it's amazing what fresh virgin oak can do to a spirit at 62%. It just is amazing how much it can pick up.
You are just doing it all over there. You've made me jealous today. It sounds like you are just living the dream. You're producing great beer and doing so many other great things. Mate, I could sit here and talk with you for another hour, but it sounds like by the sound of your phone pinging off before, you probably got another meeting in 10 or so minutes, and I know I have to get to one in my real job as well. So, mate, look, I appreciate your time today. It's been absolutely fantastic talking to you. I had so many other questions we could have covered, so maybe a part two down the track somewhere, and I know that my listeners are going to love hearing about your experiences. It's been awesome.
Yep, no worries. Cheers, Chris. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much for help. Cheers, mate.
See ya.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.